It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
More than 100 of the migrants are still on the border near San Diego waiting to be processed after the San Ysidro Port of Entry reached capacity on Sunday. Not all of the migrants wanted to wait, though. Border Patrol agents apprehended several groups of people crossing the border illegally. 11 individuals are now facing complaints from the Justice Department for entering the country illegally. And in a statement, Attorney General Jeff Sessions said in part, "The United States will not stand by as our immigration laws are ignored and our nation's safety is jeopardized." About 100 miles east of the caravan, Vice President Mike Pence met with Border Patrol agents and yesterday announced the administration is ending the catch and release policy, which would allow migrants to live in the country for years before having a hearing.
This is the beginning of keeping our promise to the American people that we're going to build a wall.
This caravan and caravans that have come before are a result of individuals who are attempting to exploit the suffering of people in Central America.
And in the Rose Garden yesterday, President Trump pointed to the caravan as a clear example of our immigration laws being exploited and said Congress needs to do something about it.
We have to have borders. We don't have borders, we don't have a country. And I've been watching for weeks as the caravan came up. We're doing the best we can with it, but we have to have changes in Congress, and we have to have it quickly.
And despite those proclamations by the administration, organizers of the caravan say they have no plans to turn back.
The message for Customs and Border Protection: stop rejecting asylum seekers who try to present themselves at the port of entry. You know what you're doing. You know you turn people away. You complain that they are breaking the law by entering illegally. You are breaking the law, and you are forcing them to break the law. That's why we have caravans.
And this afternoon, California's Governor Jerry Brown and Attorney General Javier Becerra are holding a press conference to address the caravan. Both have been extremely critical of the Trump administration's immigration policy.
Okay, Sandy Rios with you. That was Garrett Tenney on Fox and Friends First this morning. And happy to be with you on this Tuesday morning. When you hear the immigrant advocates, the asylum seeker slash advocates speaking and the immigrants demanding that they have a right to come in, it doesn't really kind of soften your heart, does it? It doesn't soften my heart because they don't have a right to come into this country. You know, when you think of asylum seekers or people fleeing trouble in other countries, you don't think of them waving the flag of their country, demanding entry, demanding everything that this country, they deserve it, you see. They have a right. That's what they're being told. I heard one of them criticizing President Trump. You know, where did they get that? What did they know? What do you know about their presidents in the Honduras and others? Do you have strong feelings? Would you walk across there or try to get across their border by criticizing the president of their country? Just saying. If you wonder why Attorney General Jeff Sessions is doing, I have to tell you that he is drawing the line on the southern border. And so is President Trump. So far, some have tried to enter illegally. They're going to probably be deported because of that. So, and the Customs and Border Patrol are saying that they can't process all of these people right now. I don't know what's going to happen. I hope they can't get in. Because if they can get in after this big fanfare and this thumbing their noses in the face of American sovereignty, they don't deserve to get in. And besides that, if they do, that means that thousands more will be coming across our border. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? So it's a drama on the southern border. And I hope that Americans, I don't think this is a partisan issue. I think it's a really good visual to help us understand what's been happening. We've had these packaged pieces from news outlets, these sympathy pieces, and certainly there are people who deserve our love and tenderness and sympathy And individually, I think we need to help people. But as a nation, we have to have rules and borders and boundaries. But we've been sold kind of a bill of goods. Our heartstrings have been played very well. And I blame religious organizations, some of them receiving hundreds of millions of dollars from the United States government for providing services, and yet they claim they have such pure motives about helping the immigrants coming across the border. It's really been a nasty business. So we'll see what happens on the southern border. And interestingly, now this is not connected to the southern border. This is connected to the proclamation that Donald Trump made about stopping the travel ban. And this is basically what I want to, this part of it is what I want to share to you. President Trump said Monday he won't apologize for his past comments about Muslims and suggestions of a Muslim ban, saying he doubts it would make a difference to the courts that are deciding the legality of his travel ban. You know, there, the hearing in the Supreme Court a couple of days ago, the arguments out of Hawaii use bits of President Trump's speeches when he was just a candidate. He wasn't even president. They're using that as evidence that he has animus towards Muslims. As far as I can understand from attorneys that I know, there's no precedent for that. You know, you don't use statements made in a campaign in a legal case at the Supreme Court. It's just, that's how weird and wacky and careless, and you could use another word, we have become in terms of how we handle our laws. It's just that things don't matter anymore. It's just what you want. Whatever you want, if you're on the left, that's what you're going to get, and it doesn't matter how you get it. So that's going to be relevant, actually, to our discussion today, because Congressman Louis Gohmert is going to join us in a few minutes, and we're going to talk about who Robert Mueller really is. Who is this special counsel, Robert Mueller, who was director of the FBI? And one of the things we'll talk about is the damning things he did to neutralize the FBI in its pursuit of Islamic terror. It's a shocking story. It's just part of what we're going to talk about. So stay with me for that discussion, if you would. All right, so another really big thing happened yesterday. But okay, let me just go about it this way. Emmanuel Macron, the French prime minister, was in Washington, you know, last week. And he made some public statements about the Iran deal because, of course, the Europeans are all, you know, eager to continue it because it's very good for them economically. President Trump has to decide by May 12th if he's going to pull out of it or not. You already know that we have sent millions of dollars, millions or billions in cash to Iran. Remember that delivery in the middle of the night in the ocean? These big carts of cash money from the Obama administration to the Iranians who are... we know they support terrorism. They were responsible for most of the IEDs that maimed our soldiers, and of course the direct killing of them as well. And yet we're giving them piles of cash because allegedly they're going to stop developing nuclear weapons. If we just pay them enough money, they'll stop. Well, so that's it's a big divide between President Trump and the leaders of Europe. So Macron made a statement last week that I want you to hear. It's clip four.
There is an existing framework called the JCPOA to control the nuclear activity of Iran. We signed it at the initiative of the United States. We signed it, both the United States and France. That is why we cannot say we should get rid of it, but we should not abandon it without having something substantial and more substantial instead.
Well, that's the magic touch of Barack Obama caused the French to sign it and the Germans and the others. So that's what he's saying. We signed this at the urging of the United States government. That was under the leadership of President Obama, who was all about helping the Iranians without exception, and the Islamists without exception. And so... interestingly enough, Benjamin Netanyahu delivered a speech that was a blockbuster yesterday, in which he revealed intelligence that's come out in the last 10 days to show in living color how the Iranians have been lying in terms of their compliance. Well, I'll let Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speak for himself. Let's listen.
Iran lied about never having a nuclear weapons program. 100,000 secret files prove that they lie. Iran continued to preserve and expand its nuclear weapons know-how for future use. Why would a terrorist regime hide and meticulously catalog its secret nuclear files if not to use them at a later date? Iran lied again in 2015 when it didn't come clean to the IAEA as required by the nuclear deal. The nuclear deal is based on lies. It's based on Iranian lies and Iranian deception.
Well, that's at least that's a part of Netanyahu's speech. He had charts and maps. He says that they're in a safe place now, locked and vaulted up. Our Secretary of State, our new one, Mike Pompeo, has verified that the information is accurate. Netanyahu is briefing European leaders now, so we'll see what happens. Now, the Iranian leaders are, you know, not happy about this. And so now they're threatening to pull out of the Iranian deal. The date for President Trump's decision is May the 12th. He has a new National Security Advisor, John Bolton, who I can tell you right now is not going to encourage him to stay in this deal, who was appalled by what President Barack Obama agreed to. And it was an amazing thing that Barack Obama, amazing damage he has done to this country, internationally and domestically, with his minions. It's just shocking. I think we only know part of it, but in time we'll know more about it. So that's what's happening with the Iranian deal. We'll talk more about that at a later date. You know, we have an election coming up, 2018. People are talking about it. There are several primaries next Tuesday. One's West Virginia, I think Indiana. I'm not sure what the other states are. There's going to be a debate tonight on Fox about, you know, Joe Manchin is the sitting candidate. And Joe Manchin, for all of his aw shucks, oh yeah, just a regular guy, kind of a centrist. No, because when you examine his vote, Joe Manchin votes with the Democrats on everything, because he is, in fact, he voted for Obamacare, he's voted for all kinds of things, tax increases, the huge budget. He talks a good game, but he actually votes with the far left. And so West Virginia has a decision. They've got three people running in the Republican primary, and there'll be a debate tonight on Fox with those three candidates. And I'm trying to get Ken Cuccinelli to join us tomorrow morning to give us kind of a rundown of what's going on in West Virginia and the other states that have their primaries coming up on Tuesday. But in regard to that, there's a really interesting poll that just came out, and this is Reuters. And Reuters, of course, is no conservative poll, trust me. And I think this is a poll that's shocking. It's got some shockwaves going through the left, and this is what it says. Enthusiasm for the Democratic Party is waning among millennials as its candidates head into a crucial midterm congressional election. Here are the details. The online survey of more than 16,000 registered voters age 18 to 34 shows their support for Democrats over Republicans for Congress slipped by about 9 percentage points over the past 2 years to 46% overall. And they are increasingly say the Republican Party is a better steward of the economy. Nearly 2 of 3 young voters polled say they do not like Republican President Donald Trump, but their distaste for him does not necessarily extend to all Republicans or translate directly into votes for Democratic congressional candidates. Let me just give you a few more facts on this. Terry Hood, this is just an anecdote, a story of somebody that was in the poll. Terry Hood, 34, an African-American who works at Dollar General store in Baton Rouge, said he voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, but he will consider voting for a Republican for Congress because he believes the party is making it easier to find jobs, and he applauds the recent tax cut. He said, they're taking less taxes out of my paycheck. I noticed that. He said, it sounds strange to me to say this about Republicans, but they are helping with even the small things. The shift away from Democrats was more pronounced among white millennials, and it says especially dramatic among young white men. But Ashley Reed, a white single mother of 3 in New Hampshire, said a teenage fascination with Democrat Barack Obama led her to support him in 2008, but her politics evolved with her personal life and goes about her. Says that as she started supporting gun rights, she lost faith in social welfare, and now she opposes abortion after having children. It's called growing up, and maybe it's happening among millennials. Come join me, because Louis Gohmert joins us next.
The influence of media is so very powerful over a person.
American Family Association and the family of Anna Bright want to warn you about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why.
I really feel in my heart, with all my soul, that that show contributed to her passing.
After binge-watching season one of 13 Reasons Why, 14-year-old Anna Bright committed suicide in the same manner depicted on the show.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option, is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack, which I think it definitely did for our daughter.
She took a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Help protect our teens by signing the AFA petition urging Netflix to pull Season 1 and cancel the upcoming Season 2 of 13 Reasons Why. You can see Anna's story and sign the petition at AFA.net. That's AFA.net.
Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, we just got back from Southeast Houston. We were there from March 10th to March 24th. We did our first ever back-to-back trips. That's right, 8 Days of Hope 14 and 15. Saw 4,692 volunteers come from all over the country. In fact, from all over the world. And God allowed us to help 844 families rebuild their homes. Some got brand new roofs. Some picked out brand new kitchen sets. We put flooring in, insulation, drywall. It wasn't just the rebuilding work that was done, because about $10.4 million of work was done for free, but it was the lives that were impacted for Jesus. We had volunteers and homeowners alike fall on their knees and say yes to our Father in heaven. Thank you so much. And that's why we do 8 Days of Hope. Hey, if you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, just go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and we'll contact you anytime we go anywhere to love and serve those in need.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Fixer Upper, the HGTV show hosted by Chip and Joanna Gaines. And one of the reasons why is because Chip and Joanna put their family first. And that brings me to a nasty hit piece published by USA Today. Writer Daryl Austin all but accused Chip and Joanna of being bad parents. He said they distort the reality that working couples cannot do it all and still make time for their family. To be clear, he offers absolutely no proof to back up his claims, none whatsoever. I mean, the guy lives in Utah, not Waco, Texas. Now, you would think USA Today would have the journalistic integrity not to publish a bunch of unfounded allegations about the parenting skills of the Gaineses. But then again, we are talking about the mainstream media here, and they never pass up an opportunity to smear faith-friendly people, especially folks like Chip and Joanna Gaines. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
So far, we've got some early bipartisan support for the Mueller being named to this post. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley praising the selection, saying, quote, "This is a victory for all Americans who believe in the integrity of the rule of law. This investigation must be given the full resources and independence it needs to succeed. We must follow the facts wherever they lead and demand complete accountability for any wrongdoing that is found." California Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican, was seen here in Stat Hall a short time ago. He expressed support for selecting Bob Mueller for this post, talked about his integrity, talked about his experience. And so this is obviously breaking news this hour. Lawmakers are learning about this selection of a special counsel. And so far, the very early reaction we're getting from both parties is quite positive. There's been great anticipation about the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein coming up to the Hill tomorrow. We were expecting Democrats would be saying, we need a special counsel to investigate. Now they have one in Bob Mueller, a well-known name with a lot of integrity and someone who has stayed out of politics since leaving the head of the FBI.
All right, so much for that. That was Mike Emanuel on Fox, and that's, of course, when Rod Rosenstein appointed Robert Mueller to be the special counsel to investigate the alleged Trump collusion with Russia. Sandy Rios back with you. That is that was a stunning moment, and I think many of us were shocked because we did not expect Well, you know, James Comey had just leaked his memos to his friend who gave them to the New York Times, and he openly said it was because he was hoping that a special counsel would be appointed. And so Rod Rosenstein rushes to the microphone and appoints none other than James Comey's very good friend and mentor to investigate all of this, Robert Mueller. Well, it turns out as things unfold that Rod Rosenstein and James Comey and Bob Mueller go back a long way. They have a lot in common, especially Rod Rosenstein and Robert Mueller in terms of a little thing called Uranium One, which was the sale of 20% of America's uranium to the Russians, with some money going to the Clinton Foundation as a little bonus. It's probably one of the biggest scandals, if you have to number them or prioritize them. That was probably one of the biggest. Rod Rosenstein was the U.S. attorney who oversaw that sale, and FBI Director Bob Mueller was the one who was the director of the FBI who knew full well what we were doing. So they sort of have a cozy relationship, and both should be under investigation for their part in that. But not to worry, because Bob Mueller is the one in charge of the investigation about so-called Russian collusion, and he's not about to investigate himself or Rod Rosenstein. You see how this goes? So recently, Congressman Louis Gohmert compiled what's kind of a white paper on former FBI Director Robert Mueller, and it's called Robert Mueller Unmasked. It's 48 pages long, and it is absolutely fascinating. And so I mentioned this to you yesterday, and we posted it on our Facebook page, and we're going to post it again today because it is so – Congressman Gohmert and I are going to talk about it in just a second, but there is so much in it. I really would really urge you to read it yourself. It's not drudgery. It's really fascinating. And so you need to know who this man is, because we've heard nothing – but boasts about how wonderful he is. As a matter of fact, it seems to me, even the Republicans have bragged on Bob Mueller and his great integrity. George Stephanopoulos recently asked Senator Cornyn about whether Mueller should be fired. And let's listen to this, clip 10.
It appears that some of the president's allies in the Congress are starting to lay the groundwork for him to fire Robert Mueller. What would that mean if the president fired the special counsel?
Well, I've read that the president's own lawyer says that's not going to happen. I think that would be a mistake myself.
Yeah, they all say that. It's a mistake. And they had said before that, oh, man, he is a man of such great integrity. He is, he's the best. I mean, he is the gold standard. I wish I had the quotes. It was like a litany of marvelousness. You know, I knew better than that because, as you know, my husband was an FBI He was part of the FBI, and he worked under Robert Mueller and saw a lot of things that happened during his tenure. In fact, I'll tell you one of them. It was, in fact, Congressman Gohmert will tell, you know, we're waiting for him to call us. So that's, if you wonder why I'm, you know, tap dancing, I am. I could talk the next 40 minutes about Robert Mueller, and if I have to, I will. But I'm hoping that he'll join me in just a second. Let me just give you an example of what he did. When Robert Mueller was appointed, it was right before 9/11. He was appointed by George W. Bush, and he had been a U.S. attorney. He had been a former Marine, and he had a record. And we'll talk to Congressman Gohmert about that in a second, too. But he was kind of a blank slate for most of us, and he surely looked tough, didn't he? So he was appointed, and then 9/11 happened. And that was, you know, shocking to all of us. And, of course, it was a hard time to take over the FBI. So in 2008, there was this, you know what? I can't remember the year. I'm sorry, I'm not prepared to do a monologue on this, but let me just say that the Holy Land Foundation trial took place after 9/11. And it was a case where we found that the Muslim Brotherhood had plans for us. You know, they found documents of their plans to overtake us with civilization jihad, to what it said, destroy their miserable house from within. That was their exact terms, destroy their miserable house from within. And as a matter of fact, because they listed all of their partners the Muslim Brotherhood's partners in order to achieve that. We knew that the Council on American Islamic Relations was one of them, the Muslim Brotherhood Association, Muslim Students Association, and on I could go. ISNA, lots of organizations that you've heard of were partners in this effort to destroy our miserable house from within. And so the FBI did a great job of going in. They put them on trial, and they found a lot of people guilty. Some were not found guilty yet, but the plan was to go back and to go after the rest of them. And a part of that, the finding was that the Council on American Islamic Relations was an unindicted co-conspirator. In other words, they were cooperating with the terrorism. They were helping in this effort to undermine us. And so the FBI, after that trial, was instructed not to officially work with CARE anymore, not to work with them, because it exposed the underbelly. You remember that CARE, what came forward right after 9/11 and were the spokespeople on all the networks talking, you know, the experts, they were telling us what to think about Islam. They were telling George W. Bush what to think, by the way, because Karl Rove, through the help of Grover Norquist on Americans for Tax Reform, was supplying the White House with a steady stream of Muslim Brotherhood operatives who are filled with taqiyya, which means lying to the infidel, and they did it beautifully. And then George W. Bush came forward and was talking about how Islam is a very peaceful religion. And remember that? Oh, they're so peaceful. It's one of the world's great religions. This is what he was telling us, because that's what the Muslim Brotherhood was telling him. And he was regularly featuring them in the White House. We saw pictures. We were doing outreach to Muslims, because heaven forbid that we be angry with what had happened to us on 9/11. So Robert Mueller is the head of the FBI. And unbeknownst to us, Robert Mueller begins to do Muslim outreach. Because, of course, we have to do outreach. One of the things that happened with Congressman Gohmert is that in one of the many House hearings, he did some very pointed questioning of Robert Mueller about Muslim outreach. And he said, "So, sir, do you have Baptist outreach? Do you have Presbyterian outreach? Do you have outreach to Buddhists?" And Bob Mueller basically said, "Oh, yes, yes, we do outreach to all of those." And he said, "Tell me about those programs. I haven't seen those." And Mr. Mueller, of course, could not answer that because it was not true. And he pointed to what he called his citizens' academies. And the citizens' academies were forums where FBI agents were instructed to teach anyone who wanted to come. I don't recall how the invitations were issued. But they would come in from various, you know, citizens, just American citizens, and come in and be briefed on FBI methods, polygraph, interrogation, whatever. And they sit there and listen to it. They had I know this because I was at one. My husband was an instructor on how the FBI conducted polygraphs, and his part in that Citizens Academy was to instruct on that. And I remember that particular academy because there were probably about 10 Muslim men in long white robes with caps who came in and absorbed really everything. It was very helpful to them, I'm sure. And in the middle of my husband's presentation, I remember they got up and took their prayer rugs and went over to the other side of the room and began to pray. But this was Robert Mueller's Citizens Academy. This was his outreach to Muslims. And at the same time he did that, he put members of the Muslim Brotherhood on these committees to decide what our national security apparatus should and should not know about Islam. Things that would be Islamophobic, you see. And so they went into the FBI and to Quantico, and under Bob Mueller, they scrubbed the manuals of anything about jihad, anything about terrorism. They scrubbed that, and Congressman Gohmert and Michelle Bachmann knew that they had and asked to see what they had scrubbed, and Mueller told them that it was classified. They couldn't see it. Of course, they're congressmen on the Intelligence Committee, and they had top secret clearance, so they actually could see it. They demanded that they see it, and they brought it. They wouldn't let them come to the FBI, but they brought it to a secret room. And there, I think there was a third congressman who came in, and they reviewed the materials that had been scrubbed. The FBI finally deigned to let the members of Congress who oversee them review the information that they had scrubbed. So this is what Robert Mueller did. He created this outreach to Muslims, of course, to Baptists and Buddhists and all of them, right? He had a, no, not so much, but he said he did, but he didn't. And the Citizens Academies were opened up to, they welcomed Muslims. I know they did. I know they did, because I was sitting next to the head of a big FBI office on a plane and had a long conversation about it. And he was boasting to me about how we're doing this outreach and that's how we get to know them. And we're going to kind of, you know, that's how we keep an eye on them. But turns out what actually happened was they kept an eye on us. And as a matter of fact, when we found out about the Orlando slaughter, the Orlando nightclub slaughter, the Pulse nightclub, and also San Bernardino and Boston, we find out through interrogation, I shouldn't use that word, we find out through Senate hearings and House hearings that FBI Director Mueller sent his FBI agents into those mosques, all right, but no, not really to ask questions or interrogate, but to listen, to do outreach, to, you know, have dinners on the floor together and share bread and common ground, but not so much to really find out what was happening. I'll never forget at the after the that Orlando Pulse nightclub massacre, Rob Mueller's FBI sent agents in, allowed members of the Council on American Islamic Relations to sit in all the interrogations that they did with suspects. Allowed them to be there when they were interrogating people. This is how ridiculous it got. And so when it came time for, when Barack Obama was elected president, this was after the Holy Land Foundation trial that found out that Kerr was an unindicted co-conspirator, part of the plan to undermine and destroy this country. Barack Obama and Eric Holder looked at the record of Bob Mueller and saw that, man, he was kind of helpful. He was actually their kind of guy. So they asked him to stay on past his 10-year assignment. 10 years. They serve it for 10 years at a time, FBI directors. And, of course, Bob Mueller agreed to do that. They also knew, I think, at the time that Robert Mueller was very cooperative in that uranium deal that was so helpful to the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. And so it was very convenient for them to have Robert Mueller, you know, this man of integrity that the Republican leadership, at least in the Senate, tells us repeatedly how much integrity he has. They felt really comfortable with him, and well, they might, because the other thing that Robert Mueller did was he made seasoned agents, he caused them to retire. How did he do that? He started this program, you know, I've actually forgotten the name of it. It was where, after they had served for 5 years, they had to transfer to another office. They had to transfer to the D.C. office, the headquarters. So no matter where you were, let's say you're raising your family someplace in Utah and you're an FBI agent and you've got kids and you're in the community and you've been there for a number of years and you know everybody, so that makes you pretty effective, actually. No matter, you had to give up that job and come to the headquarters in FBI. And so what happened was there was an epidemic of early retirements. And who retired early? It was these members of the FBI who were most adept at Islam, who had gone through 9/11, had done all the studies. Those are the ones that stepped out. And experts in crime, they lost so much. But they also gained a group of younger agents that were much more easy to mold and to shape in Mueller's mold. And so I'm just telling you, those are just a few of the things that Robert Mueller has done. I'm going to continue with this, even though I don't know what's happened with Congressman Gohmert. I'm sure there's something big. But if he does not join me in the next segment, I'm going to continue with this because it's a story worth telling. By the way, we'll put this report on our Facebook page so that you can read it. It's Robert Mueller Unmasked. It really is stunning. And I've just given you a tiny bit of it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What is the source of America's greatness? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Alexis de Tocqueville, a 19th century French political thinker and philosopher, had this exact same question. On the heels of the French Revolution, he came to America in 1831 to investigate America's ascendancy. In doing so, he found that America's greatness did not lie in her economic system. It did not lie in her banking system, nor did it lie in her educational system. He found America's pulpits aflamed with righteousness was the source of America's greatness. He opined that America is great because she is good. But when America ceases to be good, she will cease to be great. Let us pray for a restoration of the flame of righteousness in our pulpits.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association. On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Women and men alike find themselves in despair after an abortion. Every woman who had an abortion was for a short time a mother. Every man a father. But afterwards, they're all people in pain, anger, sadness, relationship problems. These often accompany an abortion. But there is hope. Call 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who has already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Hi, I'm Jan Harper. If you're a pastor's wife like me, you probably know what it feels like to live in a fishbowl. You know, that feeling like everybody is watching your every move?
The annual AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat is 3 days and two nights of relaxation and building relationships. The retreat is hosted by Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word and his wife, Jan. Special guest speakers will include AFR morning personality J.J. Jasper and his wife, Melanie. The AFA Fishbowl Retreat is set for October 9 through 11 at the Linden Valley Conference Center in Linden, Tennessee. Call 800-326-4543, extension 300, for registration and information. That's 800-326-4543, extension 300. Or visit repairingthefoundations.net. Registration is limited to the first 35 couples.
Get out of the fishbowl and into the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat. We'll see you there.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu delivered what should be the death blow to the national security fraud John Kerry once acknowledged was nothing more than a political understanding with Iran. President Trump has long and properly denounced this Obama bomb deal as the worst in history. Mr. Netanyahu disclosed that his country had managed to steal half a ton of secret Iranian materials documenting the mullah's nuclear weapons ambitions and covert programs. They prove, as he put it, Iran's leaders have lied big time. Apologists for the deal insist there's nothing to see here, folks. Move along. President Trump knows better. It takes a special kind of stupid to believe that people proven to have lied in the past and taken extraordinary steps to hide their activities aren't doing the same thing now. The Obama bomb deal enables that to continue and must be terminated. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Mr. Rosenstein, can you tell me?
After serving as Deputy Attorney General for 3 weeks, Rod Rosenstein took himself out of overseeing the Russia investigation, turning that over to Robert Mueller, saying the move is in the public interest so the public can have confidence in the outcome. Mueller is the former FBI director who served 12 years in the job. Next to J. Edgar Hoover, he's the longest serving. I asked him in 2013 about stepping down.
You going to miss all this?
Yes, no, great people, great challenge. It's been a great opportunity.
Mueller will have the full authority to investigate the Russian matter that any U.S. attorney would, including the power to file criminal charges if it comes to that.
Congressional Democrats have been pushing for the appointment of a special counsel since Rosenstein was confirmed and since Attorney General Jeff Sessions took himself out of making any decisions about the investigation. Mueller, now 72, took over as FBI director just a week before 9/11. More recently, the NFL chose him to review the handling of the Ray Rice domestic violence case. He's now in private law practice, but says he will resign from that firm to avoid any potential conflicts. The immediate effect of all this is to mean the investigation will take longer because Mueller will have to get up to speed on the case. Robert Mueller takes over his new duties immediately. Pete Williams, NBC News, Washington.
Okay, so that's how it happened. Just to take you back in time, that's how we got Robert Mueller. So on this, in this piece that Louis Gohmert has written, this white paper on Robert Mueller, which is just amazingly, this is just the tip of the iceberg. But these are the things that Congressman Gohmert has observed about him through the years of knowing him and interacting with him in Congress as his as is his role, the Judiciary Committee, and also as a former judge himself. And he's asked Mueller some tough questions through the years that Mueller has just not given satisfactory answers to. In fact, before I launch into this next segment, this is a interaction that Louis Gohmert had with Robert Mueller in during one of those hearings. Let's listen.
Your facts are not altogether well.
All right, point out specifically.
May I finish my
point out specifically. Sir, if you're going to call me a liar, you need to point out specifically where any facts are wrong.
We went to the mosque to Boston.
Prior to Boston
happening, we were in that mosque talking to the imam several months beforehand as part of our outreach efforts.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. That's really not funny. That was about the Boston bombing, the Tsarnaev brothers. And, of course, the FBI knew about the Tsarnaev brothers. They had been warned by the Russians repeatedly that they were radical Islamists. And Congressman Gohmert was grilling Bob Mueller, the FBI director, on why hadn't they done anything? Why didn't they know? Why didn't they stop them? The story about this is just incredible. I wish I had the details in my brain. I don't. I could just tell you that the FBI dropped the ball big time. And so Gohmert was really grilling Mueller for the things that they had not done, including find out that that mosque was headed by a radical imam who was actually in jail for 20 years because of the work he'd done to undermine and destroy the United States. So he's asking Bob Mueller, the FBI director, did you know about that? Did you know that he was in that? You didn't hear it there, but in a later exchange, he asks him, did you know about that imam that founded that mosque, that these men visited, that they were part of that mosque? Did you know that? And finally, he gets Mueller to admit that he did not know. He had no idea. And when he's pressing them on why, because they had been alerted to the radical nature of the Tsarnaev brothers, why they had not investigated the mosque at which they were regular attenders, he says they did visit it. But turns out, as you heard that, part of their outreach, they went there to make nice. They went there to share food and find common ground. That's what they were doing. That was the outreach program. It wasn't to investigate the Tsarnaev brothers. And one of the things that Gohmert points out, Louis Gohmert points out in his report, is that the atmosphere in the FBI that Mueller initiated during this terrible time in our history, I guess I can't say it's past, it's still present. We still have the deep infiltration of Muslim Brotherhood operatives in the conservative movement and in government. It's still there. But when this was, it could have been stopped. Robert Mueller, after he scrubbed the manuals and caused massive amounts of seasoned agents who had knowledge about radical Islam and tremendous knowledge, institutional knowledge that cannot be replaced. One of them had developed an entire training program because of his experience, and they made them destroy that training manual. It is just unfathomable. And the atmosphere that was placed in the Bureau was that agents who were now younger, more pliable, and a lot more innocent or ignorant about Islam, were then trained that if someone reported suspicious behavior about a Muslim living in America, the thing that the FBI needed to investigate was the accuser, who was likely according to Mueller, an Islamophobe. The accuser became the accused, and not so much the Muslim, not so much. And if you don't believe that, I'll tell you very frankly, when my husband and I were living in a high-rise, particular high-rise in D.C., we noted the very disturbing behavior of a person who was obviously Muslim in our building, and he had verses of the Quran all over his car. He worked out constantly, and several interactions between him and my husband proved to be troubling. Now, my husband was an active FBI agent at that time, so he called his friends that he knew, or people that he was acquainted with, who were in the terrorism division, because he wasn't at that time, to report, to ask that they do a background check on this person. Because this is when the threats were imminent and the attacks were coming, and so he asked them, and he was told point blank, absolutely not. We can't do that. If there's no investigation open to this person, we can't do that. Complete rejection by a seasoned, nearly 25-year veteran of the FBI who has tremendous experience investigating crimes, has great instincts and hunches. After all, he's an FBI agent. But no, they could not. No way, because it would be, you know, it would what? Offend Muslims. We can't. In fact, Robert Mueller made the public statement that Muslims are just like any other group, any other religion. And Congressman Gohmert asked him, if that's the case, then why are you creating this outreach to them? Why don't you have an outreach to Baptists and Buddhists? Are you saying that there's a difference? And so these are the kinds of questions that Congressman Gohmert has asked him that were just pointed. But I want to go back a little bit as best I can, without maybe having quite all the details in my head. I want to just retrace some of these other things that, let me just say this. Robert Mueller has a history of destroying people. And I don't mean destroying guilty people because they deserve some punishment for their crime. I'm talking about destroying innocent people because he feels they must be destroyed or it doesn't matter. I'm not sure which. One of the first stories that Congressman Gohmert cites in his piece is the story of Whitey Bulger, who was a criminal, a gangster. Ironically, the FBI ended up helping Whitey Bulger. This is in Boston, as I recall. They actually helped Whitey Bulger. A couple of the FBI agents later were found guilty of lying and making up evidence. And the bottom line was, whatever the details, the FBI was helping this gangster. This was under Robert Mueller's watch. I believe, I'm not sure that Mueller was the FBI director then. This thing is 47 pages long, so I can't easily find things. But I'm not sure he might have been the U.S. attorney at that time, which means he was really directly related to this crime. So it turns out later that two people were placed in prison, falsely accused, and when the facts came out about the case, Robert Mueller did everything he could to make sure that those two that were innocent, who were incarcerated, charged with crimes they did not commit, were never released. That was just one case. Kurt Weldon, congressman, I think from, I'm not sure where he's from, Wisconsin or Michigan, someplace like that. Kurt Weldon was very adamant after 9/11, that the FBI knew and had information about this attack and did nothing about it. And now, of course, this would have been not under Mueller. Mueller didn't take control of the FBI until right before 9/11, as I've told you before. So this happened earlier, but that doesn't really matter. FBI Director Mueller took over right before 9/11. Kurt Weldon talked about, Operation Something. I remember doing an interview on this. There was information that the FBI knew, and I can't go into that in detail either. But what happened was Kurt Weldon made long speeches on the floor. He wasn't a 9/11 denier. He wasn't a conspiracy person. He just felt that something was really wrong at the FBI. But this is what happened. And this, I'm reading this from Congressman Gohmert's white paper on Robert Mueller. In 2006, the Robert Mueller-led FBI took horrendously unjust actions to derail Kurt Weldon's reelection bid just weeks before the vote, actions that were later described as a hit job. And here's a quote from a piece. Each of Weldon's 10 previous reelections had been by sizable margins. Polls showed he was up by 5 to 7 points in the fall of 2006. 3 weeks prior to the election, however, a national story ran about Weldon based upon anonymous sources that an investigation was underway against him and his daughter, alleging illegal activities involving his congressional work. Weldon had received no prior notification of such an investigation and was dumbfounded that such a story would run, especially since he regularly briefed the FBI and intelligence agencies on his work. A week after the news story broke, alleging a need to act quickly because of the leak, FBI agents from Washington raided the home of Weldon's daughter at 7 a.m. in the morning. Local TV and print media had all been alerted to the raid in advance and were already in position to cover the story. Within hours, Democratic protesters were waving caught red-handed signs outside Weldon's district office in Upper Darby. And needless to say, he lost his election. Then Congressman Gohmert goes on to talk about FBI Mueller's involvement in Ted Stevens, the senator from Alaska, who was charged with crimes that later we found out he did not commit. This was done because we later find out that FBI agents had lied. They had fabricated evidence. Ted Stevens lost his election, and this was right before Obamacare was going to be voted on, and they needed every single vote. He was a Republican at the time. Every single vote was needed to stop Obamacare. So just ironically, Ted Stevens is taken out in the election because he's accused now of this of these criminal acts, whatever they were. I think it had to do with construction on his home. It was bizarre. And not long after that, Ted Stevens was killed. And I can't remember the details of that either, but I remember it was a terrible tragedy. And then we find out that the FBI actually was complicit in fabricating the case against Ted Stevens. That's another thing that happened under Bob Mueller's watch. I could go on and on. We could talk about the anthrax. Remember the anthrax scare? And you might recall that the FBI targeted a man named Dr. Stephen Hatfield. Molly Hemingway of The Federalist has written extensively about this, and you may have heard her mention it when she's on the panel on Fox Special Report. But Dr. Stephen Hatfield was a specialist in this kind of thing, whatever the exact title. And he had no record of anything like this, but they were convinced he must have done it. And yet they had another suspect who actually had a long history in anthrax and had a history of mental illness and had, anthrax, the availability to get his hands on anthrax, but they ignored that and went after Stephen Hatfield and destroyed him, destroyed his career, destroyed his reputation. And then we find out later that that was totally a sham. He had nothing to do with it. And the person who was guilty of it had gotten away all of these years. The pattern that we see is that Robert Mueller has destroyed. I didn't even get to all of it. Like I said, it's 47 pages. It's Congressman Gohmert's white paper on Robert Mueller. And we're going to put it on our Facebook page. I've not told you all of it. So I hope that you will go and read it. And you'll understand why. This is what President Trump and the country, more importantly, the country itself, is up against. We have a man in charge who's protecting people who are as guilty as he is of doing things that have undermined the safety of this country in a very serious way. And he's bound and determined to protect himself, protect his friends. He is no man of honor. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.